have your attention, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your hosts, Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
The best guests, the best insight.
Lofton with his team down by two, to the corner, Caputo! No good! And it's over! St. Louis is going dancing!
All backed by over 40 combined years of covering the biggest events in St. Louis sports.
Blues have the puck, Thomas off the wall, shoots, and it's in!
Let's
they
go.
Score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon! Bring out the Zamboni! Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he saved them to the conference finals!
Now, here are Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan KFNS and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne here till 12 o'clock. Hallie, the intern, is here. Brian Hoffman is here. And, of course, Plowsy. Martin, how are you today?
And in my mind, Plowsy is a Hall of Famer from Western Illinois, okay? Yeah. He's right up there with Rodney Harrison, Joe Roderick, all the greats. What's billboards funny, for Plowsy.
Rodney refuses to acknowledge that he was a leatherneck, but we still have a plaque of him. His 1 year there at Western, it was memorable.
Oh, it was only 1 year.
I think so, yeah.
Huh.
Hold on. Like, Mizzou claims Brad Pitt and Sheryl Crow. Did they graduate from Mizzou?
At least they were in a fraternity. They engulfed themselves into the campus. I'm not quite for sure Rodney did the same thing there
Marquette
at Western.
Marquette claims Dwayne Wade. He didn't graduate from the
school. He's working on it.
Oh, yeah. Well, how about all those Kentucky guys?
Yeah.
I mean, I took as many classes as the Marcus Cousins.
Mizzou no longer claims the Enron guy. Remember? He was like the head of Enron. Kenneth.
What is his
Blay,
name?
Bay...
Kenneth Lay.
Lay. I think he's a proud Mizzou alum.
It's interesting because at the SMET, on the state championship banners, one of our assistant coaches got into trouble by molesting kids. And there's a black piece of tape over his name on like three of the banners.
It's like when a motorcyclist gets their patch taken away, they have to get a black tattoo over their...
Well, how about this weekend in the Post-Dispatch, the front page... about all of the Catholic priests, and they came out with the names, and the guy who had a picture in the front, he married Monique and I.
Is that right?
That's right. Proud day.
Well, I got to say, there was a lot of names on there and a lot of names that I knew as well.
Yeah.
And I think friends of mine, you know, get an email chain going, did you see this? Did you see this? It's alarming how many names are on that list. And kudos to the Post-Dispatch, who did a lot of investigative reporting and knocked on doors and tried to get some answers, because it's been... equally alarming how few answers there are.
What was the great movie? It was out of the Boston Globe who broke the story about all the Catholic priests.
There was a movie made about it? Mainstream movie?
Yes.
Yeah, it won a bunch of Oscars.
It wasn't... Tom Hanks did the one on the Pentagon Papers, but there was another one that was really good about...
Spotlight.
Yeah. Really outstanding.
What about the... documentary, it was a series, and I don't know, probably available on Netflix, who produced it, but it was about the woman who was a nun in the Baltimore area that went missing in the 60s. And there were a number of young girls who said they had been molested, and it was part of a huge cover-up, and this young nun that they all really liked was going to be the person who helped blow the whistle, and she went missing. I cannot remember the name of that series, but it was...
At an apartment complex, and they tried to...
That was haunting. And then these students, these female students, years later, now in their 60s, were getting together and were kind of digging in and wanting more what happened to this nun that they were really close to.
Was that on Netflix or HBO? I forgot which service.
I can't remember the
really
name of it.
Good.
The Keepers, yes, that's it. If you haven't watched it, it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
How did we get on this? All of this started with Plowsy being a Hall of Famer.
There is a St. Louis Media Hall of Fame, and I just wrote a letter on Tim Van Gelder's behalf, who I thought was really one of the cool sportscasters we've ever had here. And, boy, that would be awesome to see him get in there. There's not many sports guys in that Hall of Fame.
Is there an actual – like, is there a facility? Are they enshrined anywhere? Should be the back of like Town Hall, the old bar on McCausland.
You should write a letter of recommendation for Iggy.
Ken Strode, years of service. What are we looking at?
What would Frank point to? Years of service.
Longevity.
He's been working.
What? What can you say about Kenny? Oh, he's been around.
It would be the best Hall of Fame media speech that they've seen, I think, if you had Iggy
He'd
up there.
He'd rattle some cages there.
He'll have some zingers.
He once booked Billy Bean for Frank and went to a
That was David Coppé.
David Coppé. Okay, I'm sorry.
He got the wrong gay athlete
Went to great lengths to do so.
I thought JC did bring up a good point yesterday. Dan Kelly's name should be in the Walk of Fame on Del Mar.
And there's no reason that he wouldn't be with great St. Louis announcers. You walk along, you know, Del Mar on a Saturday night, eat a couple tacos, and you look down and you say, Buddy Ebsen? Oh, that's right. I think he's from Belleville. I mean, you forget a number of people who have connections.
Buddy Ebsen from the Jed Clampett?
Yeah.
He's a, I didn't know. Vincent Price?
Wasn't he Barnaby Jones? Wasn't that Buddy Ebsen?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But he was from the Belleville area. But Dan Kelly and JC said it, it's merely an oversight. There's nobody that says he doesn't belong. It just never happened.
And then I asked Mike Bush last night, why would JC have any animosity towards Karen Foss? And then he said that he thought that, that JC thought that Karen may have had something to do with his demise at Channel 5.
Okay. Well, he's very clear he didn't care for her.
That's about as direct as you could get. All right, we got a good guest list today, Martin. Dr. Rick is going to join us at 10:30. Nate Lucas, tell us about Nate.
Yeah, Nate's a young broadcaster doing some play-by-play for the Springfield Cardinals, and with all the talk about Randy Arozarena, I thought we'd get a scouting report, and I love the fact his radio station, he's on the air right now in Springfield, and Nate also was a Cardinal radio intern, worked with Mike Shannon in the booth, but cutting his own teeth now in the radio world. He works for Jock 98.7. Isn't that a cool name?
That's good, yeah.
Jock 98.7. So he's going to give us a scouting report. We can talk about Dylan Carlson, Arozarena when he was down in Springfield, and some of the younger players that have worked their way through the system. And maybe he can explain why Randy isn't at the big league level just yet.
It's that tricky 40 man, Martin.
Well, if we got Cingriani on there,
you got to keep the injured pitchers on.
It's getting crazier, isn't
it? So, in terms of guys who should not be on there,
Tony Cingriani.
And then Drew. Robinson.
You can make the case for Drew Robinson. There was the reliever.
I'm Justin Williams.
Justin Williams from the bad fam trade. He probably shouldn't be on it either.
And of course, Brett Cecil. That's four.
Brett Cecil, who you told
don't
worry about this year.
God, I don't know why Mo doesn't hire us. We could trim that roster real quick.
Cecil's still on the 40-man?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's been told to wait till next year.
And Cingriani will be a free agent, so that'll free up a spot.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that Cecil was
I'm sure these guys are all smarter than us baseball-wise.
Well.
But I sometimes wonder.
All right, our opening monologue is brought to you by the great people at Worldwide Technology Raceway, site of the Bomarito 500 on August 24th. Let's begin with lap one. So upon further review, the Cardinals do need a fifth starter. Michael Wacha is not and will not be the answer in 2019.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. If it's fair, it's gone. It's fair into the lows. A monster shot. He's tied with Yelich.
Michael had good stuff. He really did. I mean, the ball was coming out well.
That's a good place to stop it. That's fine. I know you didn't mean to.
I know you didn't mean to. Accidentally, but I guess we don't need to go any
feel
further.
Feel free to just pull the plug on that soundbite. I give you permission.
God bless Michael Wacha. Nice man. Did great things for the organization at times. But I think he started his last game for the Cardinals.
No,
their
didn't.
Off day's coming. They can skip a fifth starter, at least in the near future. Maybe his career has a second act. Unfortunately, it's not going to be in St. Louis. And I think what Mike Schilt was trying to emphasize last night, his velocity, which sometimes means something, but it did last night, was in the high 90s, or 95, a lot.
Yeah, I do think, well, a number of things. Michael Wacha got lit up. Who knew, right? The Dodger guy shuts him down. Who knew? But I think Schilt is making it worse because I know, and Dave Duncan used to say this all the time. You might see Kip Wells get destroyed and say, hey, it's some good stuff. And it's a different interpretation than results. I understand that. But I think right now, what Joe Strauss would call the happy talk is a little more nauseating than it's been in the past.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's a good look.
All right, lap two. So moving forward, they're now a half game out of the second wild card spot. And with the Cardinals facing Kershaw tonight and the Cubs at home with John Lester on the mound, well, the Cardinals could be trailing by 3.5 games at this time tomorrow. And I have to tell you, the anger towards this organization is higher now than I can remember in a long time. I think it's worse right now than anything in the Matheny regime. That trade deadline day, which actually resulted in a Cardinal win, but they've crumbled afterwards, has people irate. The approval rating for the organization right now is as low as I can remember. I mean, the themes, too. Everybody echoing the same themes. Matt Carpenter, why does he play? Michael Wacha, why does he pitch? Dexter Fowler, why is he playing? He's 8 for his last 54. Martin, I've been under the impression that regardless of how the season unfolds, Bill DeWitt would not shake up the front office. I'm not 100% certain of that now.
Well, I think Matheny absorbed a lot. I mean, if you had a bad bullpen and he'd go to these guys that he's being handed and guys just weren't that good, or if he had a lineup that wasn't really that productive, but that's what he was handed, he took a lot of bullets. Now, he made mistakes in the dugout. There's no doubt about it. But once he was removed, it shifted the focus because he absorbed a lot for a long time. And I think that trade deadline, the optics on it, where, you know, that Castellanos for the Cubs had 3 hits last night. They went and got a guy.
Where'd you plan?
Charlie's been beating the drum that even if you just got a Vargas or you got a Homer Bailey.
You see Zach Wheeler's last start. He was in talks with that. I mean, he just had, I think, 7 scoreless, 6 scoreless innings.
And there. Tanner Roark, these guys who were not big items, but just gives you some depth. I think the commish disagreed last week. He said, well, those guys aren't any better than what you have.
Yeah, they are.
I disagree when Michael Wacha just can't get people out. And you really have nowhere to turn.
All right, so this is the maddest Cardinal fans have been in, or do you think they were even madder a year ago or 2 years ago?
I don't think so, because it's been building. And most of it, while it was building, was like, when are you getting rid of Matheny?
Yeah, it depends on where the anger was directed at. The Matheny one was pretty...
They were very hostile towards Matheny, but I think he's slowly vindicated. Now, was he the greatest manager? No. But he had a really strong record when the team was pretty good. Guess what? The talent dropped off. The team has dropped off. And they've just been sort of treading water. Yeah. The Cubs are on pace to win 88. The Cardinals don't appear to be a team that's going to win 88.
No.
Probably not. And this is a year the division was... You could win the division with 88, 89 wins, and you still sort of sat on your hands. I think that's... That trade deadline, the optics of it, hey, we tried, we couldn't get anybody... I think that sticks out.
After you and called them out and said, hey, if you play better, we'll be more aggressive. And they did, and then you did nothing.
You know what's really depressing? It used to be, well, Memphis is loaded. I mean, they'd win the AAA championship. They're 12 games under 500. Not that it really matters how your AAA team is in the win-loss column.
It kind of does.
You don't really, I mean, it's not always an indicator because you could be taking pieces away from them when they need to win games. But if you look at Memphis, they're 12 games under, and there's no pitcher right now that you're saying, bring them up. We used to be able to yell, get Reyes up here. Get Ponce de Leon. I don't know where they turn.
Left three. All right, so Pat Maroon, spent some time with him yesterday, and he's one of the very few American-born players to win a Stanley Cup in his hometown. In fact, here's the question for you guys. If I texted Cam Jansen, Mike Caruso, Jeremy Rutherford, and Andy Strickland to say and ask them this question. What American-born player has won a Stanley Cup in his hometown? Which of those four media members or members of the St. Louis hockey community do you think gave me the answer?
Price Strick.
No. Was it Strick?
No.
Oh, Rutherford.
Okay.
Wow.
No.
Maroon.
Well, he wasn't one of them. Did Cam? So it's down to Cam or Caruso.
Cam or Caruso.
Bruce is busy golfing and shining Al McInnes' car. So I'm going to say Cam knew this.
I would have put it in that order, too, but it was Caruso.
I hope you're listening, Mike.
We love
Never
you.
Doubted you. All right, so is it a short list?
Well, we only have one right now. It's Brian Rafalski in 2008, Dearborn, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit, when the Red Wings won.
Of course, Razzie.
Former Badger.
Yes. So Mike Caruso comes through.
So we think it's two. Two American-born players that won in their hometown. Is that it?
Oh, that's what the we have now.
And then the asterisk would be that Zach Sanford won the Cup in his hometown. Does that count?
No.
American-born?
No. Not at all.
It was a joke.
All
right. Thanks, guys.
So he is the only one to eat toasted Rav out of the Stanley Cup. Many have had pasta, but nobody has had toasted Rav. He also is 31 years old without a team. Not overly concerned. He knows he's going to be in a training camp on September 15th, but the market right now is really, really quiet. He said GMs take vacations. There are restricted free agents to tend to also. He looks like he's in great shape, not skating, but working out every day. And despite the uncertainty of his future, Martin, he's not letting this get in the way of enjoying the season of his life.
But yeah, obviously you never thought of it a million years that I would come home and sign a one-year deal and then win a Stanley Cup. If you would have told me that in the beginning of the year, I would have been like, you're full of it. But we had a good team. Obviously, the start wasn't where we wanted to be, but we found out how to play our game and how to get to our game, and it worked, and it was effective. And Craig Berube did a really good job of making sure everyone's held accountable, and it was really good. So that being said, no. I mean, this is everything I ever dreamed of coming home, winning the Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues, a team I grew up watching, do it in front of my fiance, my family, her family. My son gets to see me every day, go to work every day, and see what I do every day. And the Stanley Cup's the icing on the cake. I mean, that's unbelievable.
I like the fact that he's embracing it. I mean, you know, you could be a little bit paranoid. Hey, where am I going to go? But boy, he's enjoying this freaking summer. And he knows eventually, you know, sometimes this happens in sports. Just, hey, a few days before training camp, hey, you know what? This guy's still out there. Let's take him.
Yeah, he'll end up somewhere. And I think he knows that. A guy who played for the St. Louis Bandits and probably less than 10 yes. years later ends up winning the cup. I think he should milk it. It's clear he's been enjoying the ride. And wouldn't you? I mean, you could be really boring and say, nope, got to get back after it. That's in the past. That's too big a moment. That's too rare in St. Louis sports history to just sort of dismiss it. So I don't blame it all for when, I mean, I'm sure he's not just sitting there all day watching video clips of himself and the season that was. He's training, getting ready for next year. But when asked about it, you should embrace it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And especially, we thought he might get dealt at the deadline. And people wonder, God, is he going to be on the ice if they do make the playoffs? There were a lot of questions about him during the season.
Instead, he got hot at the end of the season.
Yeah, to overcome all of that and then to get to win the cup. Yeah, I don't blame him for... You should milk it at least emotionally as long as you can.
All right, lap four. I kind of like this Freddie Kitchens, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. He could be the most interesting team in the league. Here's what he said about coaches talking to the media anonymously.
You know, the days of inside information and the days of unnamed sources and stuff like that have ended. So you're not going to get any information like that ever. Anybody. And if I ever see it, they're fired immediately. That's the way we're running this organization. And I can take it. John Dorsey can take it. We won't crack, I promise you.
I like his passion. And the premise of his comments, if you're the head coach, you're dead on. I do want to say this. Anonymous quotes are one thing, but we in the media need, like, sources. We need people who can tell us some things kind of off the record. We need people in the organization who will open up and, like, tell us kind of like the real story. And we all have these sources. This stuff doesn't happen quite as much anymore. I can remember in the old days, Walt Jocketty would tell me things on the phone that were really fascinating that I could use as background in reporting a story. Even Charlie Army would open up. Present executives, Martin, and I'm sure you agree with this, don't do that as often. Now, some guys in the media get it. I mean, the best in any sport is Woj in the NBA. The bottom line is you don't have to directly quote the guy, but it really helps us if we can relay some information about what's really going on.
I just think the media got so much bigger that every team, every executive got more paranoid. Because it used to be, you know, 20 years ago, Charlie Army telling you something, you might pass it along that day at 5 o'clock, or you might mention it on the radio. Now it's plastered everywhere. Rams looking to move, Trunk candidate. I mean, because the pressure is to get it out there immediately, I think the paranoia has grown so much that they just can't afford to. I mean, think about the old days. Babe Ruth was running on the trains, right? Women chasing him. Everybody knew what was going on, but it wasn't reported. And there weren't all the outlets. I just think teams are so paranoid right now. And there's too much media, probably.
I agree with
that. There's too much coverage. So they just say it's easier. And they also have their own websites and Twitter accounts. They want to break their own story. They didn't used to have that. But, yeah, I missed that. And a lot of it wasn't, as you said, to go verbatim on the air, but just kind of background. Here's a guy we're really looking at. Here's why we're looking at. Or if this doesn't work out, we're going to let this guy go. Yeah, I do miss that. And by the way, the Browns, I never would have thought they'd be an interesting franchise, sort of a sexy franchise. When you got Baker Mayfield crushing beers, you've got Odell Beckham, who's a lot of ego, but stirs it up.
I mean, after the Patriots, they're the most interesting team in the league, I think.
I mean, if I told you the Browns are on Thursday Night Football, the last 10 years, you'd say, well, that's a game to skip. Aren't you interested now? And Colin Cowherd's in some sort of feud with Baker Mayfield, and then the whole city of Cleveland has turned on Colin Cowherd. Even the Indians.
Rightfully so. Colin Cowherd has never been, like, high on Baker Mayfield. He's always said he's never make it. Look at his size. I don't know about his arm. Everything he's said about him is negative.
It makes me want to root for the Browns.
Absolutely.
And they've been down and out so long. And that Freddie Kitchens, he sounds like he should be coaching Alabama State or something.
You're right. All right, lap five. So Vince Carter will become the first player to ever play in four different decades. Think about that, four decades. This will be season number 22 for the Atlanta Hawks shooting guard. That's a record, too. You know what I thought was the most interesting thing about this is that of the guys who've played 21 years or more in the league, excluding Carter, they're all seven-footers. Dirk Nowitzki, Kevin Garnett, Kevin Willis, and Robert Parrish. Kareem, by the way, played 20. I think there's a perception that big men just don't last. And there have been quite a few with leg and foot issues like Yao Ming, Bill Walton, Sam Bowie, and Joel Embiid is not exactly Lou Gehrig either. So Vince Carter, who we shot a story on at Oakville Junior High about 20 years ago, is now an historical basketball figure, 22 years in the league. He didn't become Kobe or win a title, but 22 years, 25,000 points, he's going to the Hall of Fame.
It's so funny that you mentioned the Oakville Junior High, because I was going to say...
Were you there?
We did an interview, and I said it was either Melville or Oakville, and I can't remember where. Got him coming outside the gym, and I was doing Saturday Night Sports at the time, and I got him to say, a little plug. He's like, hey, what's up? It's Vince Carter, and I'm watching Sports Final every Saturday. We got him to do a little blurb, because, of course, you got to do your own promotions. And he couldn't have been nicer. And I think he was all about his mom. And what
That's
I remember
right,
about the piece, a lot about his mom.
Was he the one who, like...
Went back and graduated?
Did he have to, like, take a flight, play a playoff game? Or was that Hayward?
Now, that sounds familiar. I can picture him with the cap and gown.
Yeah.
How about his draft? The draft class of 98? You remember who was number one?
Carter was five.
Carter was five. The first three.
Yeah.
Number one, Michael Olowokandi.
Oh.
Candyman.
The Candyman. What a bust. Mike Bibby was second.
Good player.
Rafe LaFrance, third.
Solid player. Yeah.
Anton Jameson.
Good player.
Vince Carter. Robert Traylor. Rest in peace.
Speaking of blown out.
Jason Williams. I think that was white chocolate, right? Larry Hughes, number eight. The same draft. And then number nine was Dirk.
Ty Lue was in that draft.
Is that right?
Who has
Dirk
since
was
gone on to
nine?
Be a coach.
If I'm not, let me see if I can get
out of that, if
again.
Redrafting, Larry
Wait a minute,
Hughes.
Dirk, are you sure Dirk, because he's in the league one less. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Did I get
that
right? Yeah. Because the Bucks drafted Dirk. And Milwaukee, say what you will, has always loved white NBA players. They packaged him up and shipped him for Robert Traylor, Tractor Traylor. And they could have. Can you imagine the German guy Dirk in Milwaukee for 20 years?
Oh my gosh!
Would have been pretty popular, but they traded for Robert Tractor Traylor.
All right, lap six. Stream of consciousness. Couple of quickies here. Looks like Kelly Bryant's hamstring, Albert O's knee, not serious injuries. Just imagine if they were, though, for a moment. Could you imagine what would? Oh, and we think this NCAA thing is brutal. You lose Kelly Bryant and Albert O in a span of like 2 minutes, too. Unbelievable. Boathouse is our food picks this week. And here's the perception by most of the Boathouse up until like 2 years ago. Well, kind of a nice atmosphere, but man, this food is really mediocre. How are they still in business? Well, because of the ambiance of the atmosphere. Well, now Sugar Fire has taken it over, and the food is sensational, including beef brisket toasted ravioli, which was outstanding, and they just do an incredible business. So.
Have you already sampled The food?
Quite a bit of
Was this a Stasiak operation?
Of course. Oh, yeah.
It is a cool spot.
It is.
You're sitting right there on the water, the paddle boats. LaRusse and his wife and daughters did that one year, remember?
Really?
It was late in the season, and they were looking for something to do, and they went out on the paddle boats. I don't know why I remember that, but it was a playoff year. I think it was the weekend they were in town. Maybe it wasn't the end of the year. I think it was the weekend that the plane flew over.
Oh, and
that said that, fire LaRusse, yeah. And somebody paid for the plane to circle the stadium, and he said it was the weekend his wife and kids were here.
Wow.
Brutal. That said, go to the boathouse. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a positive. It turned into a negative. Funny how that happens.
I went on a paddle boat once with Monique, and I mentioned it on the
radio.
I thought
you meant Stasiak, no?
No. And I got killed for it.
Oh, why not? What, with your wife? You can't go on a paddle boat? Come on.
Yeah.
Now, if it was
now when
McKenna,
she does all the paddling.
Right. He was eating toasted crabs. He's got his
feet up.
He's got a box for Dom. She's doing all the paddling.
All right, we'll take a short time out. Dr. Rick, when we come back, this is the Hollywood Casino Press Box.